It's time once again to take a look behind the Tweed to find out about the interesting work being done from within the hallowed halls of academia. A new study is underway at the Cognitive Science Laboratory at the University of Western Australia. It looks at the way we process surprising information, how we retain our belief in common myths, and why certain myths seem to hang around so long in society. PhD student Bryony Swire is one of the academics conducting the study, and she joins me now on Behind the Tweed. Bryony, welcome to RN Drive.
Thanks for having me.
Now, when you say surprising facts and common myths, I mean, what do you mean by that?
Well, surprising facts can be anything where you're not quite sure to begin with, and then you learn something new and you're surprised to find out that it's actually true. Like, for example, that people sneeze when they look into the sun. That's an example of a...
And that's true.
Yes, yes.
And I also, another one might be, I read this somewhere, is that it's impossible to keep your eyes closed when you sneeze. Is that another one?
I think that is true, actually. I haven't looked into that one. That's
apparently
a good one.
I knew that. Anyway, so that's surprising facts. And common myths, what's the contrast between the two?
So common myths are naturally the opposite. So things people aren't quite sure about, or they originally believed to be true and they turn out not to be true. For example, one common myth that exists is that 90% of communication is nonverbal. This originated a long time ago from actually some valid science, but over time it's been twisted and oversimplified to the point where it's not even true anymore. So you go ahead and explain why.
And what's the drive to explore how people come to terms with these surprising facts and common myths? Is it around people's philosophy or around how they think? I mean, what are we going to find out about people understanding about how they respond to these two things?
Well, I think it's really important to look at how we process information, particularly when we find out that people don't do it very well. So when you try and retract information that isn't true, we see that even if people explicitly say, yep, I've got it right, that's not true, they continue to use this inaccurate information in their reasoning and their decision-making, which is actually really scary.
Are there certain categories of myths that people tend to believe?
Myths can be broken down a few different ways, firstly, how they originate. Some of them can be just these ideas that occurred a long time ago, kind of like old wives' tales. For example, one would be that you can see the Great Wall of China from the moon. I believe this originated long before people had ever been to the moon. And even since then, when we have photos and evidence that it is a myth, it's still something that you do hear.
Yes, it's something I believe. But when you think about it, it just seems completely insane.
Kind of. And I think this
unless
is one of those...
Unless it was lit up, but incredibly, like it had spotlights all the way along it. Extraordinary
yes.
lighting. I mean, that
yes.
would be the only way.
Yes, exactly. It's just a lot of the time these myths work that when people really do analyse them or think about them a bit more, especially when we provide them with this really good detailed retraction, they see how, yes, okay, this is completely a myth. I can see that this is inaccurate. Yet that makes it almost a little bit more interesting that they still continue to use this inaccurate information within their reasoning.
What do you think causes common misconceptions, you know, and why do they proliferate? Why do we hold on to them?
It's a really interesting question. One of the theories that I'm actually looking into at the moment is that within the retraction itself, you contain this inaccurate information. And when this happens, so for example, I'll use the Great Wall of China example. The fact that I've told you the Great Wall of China does not or cannot be seen from the moon, the fact that I've mentioned the Great Wall of China and visible from the moon within the same sentence makes this false link more familiar.
Ah.
And the issue with familiarity is that familiarity has this really bizarre effect where people think familiar information is true.
And is that why you say, I mean, I've read in your work that the attempt to correct misinformation can actually make the problem worse. Is it because in trying to argue people out of this, you're still making those connections in that
absolutely,
myth?
Absolutely. So there's a few reasons why it could make it worse and backfire. One is the familiarity argument, and that's the one that I'm specifically looking into. And another reason is possibly if a person feels that their strong beliefs that they hold close as part of their identity is challenged. And when these are challenged, people can be motivated to defend them irregardless of whether or not the information is scientifically valid.
This is Rebecca Huntley on RN Drive. This is our pretty much regular segment, Behind the Tweed, and I'm talking to Bryony Swire. She's an academic at the University of Western Australia, and we're talking about how and why people retain their belief in common myths. I want to ask you about this. This is something that's been very topical, this kind of link between vaccinations and autism that was put out there really by the anti-vaccination crowd. You've done some study into that. And the thing that's interesting about that is that, you know, we had doctor after doctor on Australian television saying there is no link and the one study that linked it was, you know, problematic. Why does this persist?
That's actually a really important question, and it's one of the examples that we use all the time just for an example into how serious the effect of inaccurate information can be in society. So yes, this was one study in 1998. The Lancet published a study that suggested a link between the MMR vaccine and autism. And it was since, I think it was quite slow, but the media got hold of it and it was spread quite rapidly. And I believe that in some places around the world, vaccine levels still haven't recovered. And even in Australia, I think I was reading yesterday that 77,000 children have not been fully vaccinated.
For those people who believe that, is there something that makes them susceptible to believing that, or are they just like the rest of us?
We haven't actually researched into individual differences yet. So what is it about the actual person that's likely continue to believe in this inaccurate information, although we do know that a level of scepticism helps your ability to analyse information and see whether or not on the face of it whether you reckon it's true or false.
Everything that you're studying has some obvious implications for people whose job it is to try and combat common myths. You know, for example, doctors who are, you know, the one that we were just talking about, doctors who are hoping to really make sure that this anti-vaccine message doesn't spread too widely, or people in the environment movement, and you can think about any organisation that has to consistently combat common myths in order to do their work. What advice would you give them? And coming out of the study, what are we getting, and what's going to help us really stay on the side of truth rather than keep propping up these common myths?
I think it's not just a question for people who, like, you know, fact checkers and people in environmental movements. I think it's a good question for all of us, that we should all be motivated to try and look for reputable sources, and also for a case of, like, personal responsibility of spreading information. Like, if you know something to be untrue or aren't really sure about something, then it's probably best not to post it on the internet as fact, or, you know.
Is it that we just have to watch more QI?
I think that's it. I think more QI for all.
I think the whole of QI is based on, you know, actual, you know, busting these common myths.
Yep. Although, interestingly, yeah, I did watch quite a bit of QI when I was collecting stimuli for my PhD, and I'd go and I'd, you know, fact check them all really carefully and look for academic studies to see whether or not, and some of them, I mean, you'll find that even QI has a corrections page.
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And things like, I think they said once that chameleons don't change colour for camouflage, they change it to show mood. And I remember looking into this myth, and it was really interesting in that it's still something that's being debated by the scientific community.
Ah, right. It could be a mixture of both a mating mood issue and also a camouflage issue.
Absolutely. But I think it was really interesting for me particularly, just knowing that once something's out there, you can't totally take it back. And that even if people, you know, like, who are driven to find truth and everything, even they get things wrong, and just to know if you can't take it back, it's amazing how we can get anything right.
Isn't one of the problems here, of course, that there aren't always definitive answers to some of these questions?
Absolutely. I mean, the more you know about a topic, the more you realise you don't know. So truth is really slippery, and it's hard to know what's true and what's false.
Well, it's a fascinating study, Bryony. I wish you the best of luck with it.
Thank you very much.
PhD student Bryony Swire joining us on Behind the Tweed to discuss how and why we retain our belief in common myths.